Well, puzzled. Well, we are certainly looking at some things in life that seem to puzzle us at times. And we're looking at them so that we don't have to stay puzzled, so that we don't have to remain in a puzzled state. And so we've looked at this idea of handling stress, that there's these pressures of life that they come. But just because the pressures are there doesn't mean that we have to be stressed about the pressures of life that come. That we looked at some key things at what we could do so that we could handle these pressures that come at us. And so if we could live in such a way that we would go, hey, I need to live with a sense of purpose and urgency, that I need to know that I've got a sense of purpose, that I can live that way. I need to live by putting first things first. And I don't put the little things first. I'm going to put the most important things, the first things first, so that I'm not having leftovers to try to deal with the most important things. That I'm going to live with my heart set on heaven. That when we live these ways, we can reduce the stress that comes in to our life, because we're going to say, here's the pressures of life, but here's how I can best handle them because I know the reason for which I'm living. We've looked at this idea of forgiving others, because forgiving others is certainly one of these things that is puzzling for us. And it's puzzling to think about it, because when we have this issue with somebody else that they've hurt us, and that wound, the deeper it is, the harder it is for us to choose to release them of that. And so we want to hold on to that. But when we do, we are only holding ourselves down. And so we've got to choose to release them and forgive them. And by setting them free, we set ourselves free of that pain and that hurt of just carrying it around with us as we go throughout our lives. And one of the things that seems to be puzzling when it comes to forgiveness is that oftentimes that the person that we struggle with the most in forgiving, it's ourselves. It's forgiving ourselves, of letting ourselves off the hook. But it is one of the greatest things that we could do. Last week we looked at recognizing God's voice. And as we looked at this, it wasn't this, hey, there's this audible voice, we just need to tune in and hear it. But we do need to recognize that God is speaking. And one of the reasons that we don't hear God when he's speaking is because we have these, what I call these weapons of mass distraction. These things that are distracting us from hearing God as he's speaking to us. We looked at these four key ways that God speaks through. And he speaks through the Bible. And so if we want to hear from God, let's get in the Bible. Let's read it. And let's hear what God has already said. And so let's listen that way. God speaks through others. That the God, he speaks through prayer, if we'll hang out in prayer time long enough. And that God speaks through circumstances. And we looked and said, hey, if you really want to be able to hear from God, well, that there's some things that you could do to increase your ability to hear from him. And that is that we would be still, that we would be quiet, that we would be focused, and that we would be prepared for God to speak. And so today we're going to talk about overcoming fear. You know, fear is one of these very real emotions that we all know and understand. It's one of the most universal human emotion. So everybody in the room understands fear. Now for you might be somebody, it takes a lot for me to be able to deal with fear, and you might be somebody that I just mention it and all of a sudden you're like going, I'm kind of afraid to hear this talk. Because you just so easily can get gripped with fear. And it's this fear, that this emotion that is so real, and it's instinctual for us to begin to have and feel a sense of fear at times. And nothing grabs our attention like fear. That when we're just kind of going along and doing our own, but when fear comes right along, nothing, it doesn't just slowly just creep up. It can just wham. It just hits us, and nothing gets our attention like fear. That fear, in its pure form, it's meant to protect us. That when fear is pure, it's there and it's meant to protect us and to keep us from doing something that's going to cause harm to ourselves or even to others. But then there's another way that fear comes in, and that is that this polluted fear. And polluted fear, not pure fear, but this polluted fear brings a false fear. And it's this polluted fear that keeps us from experiencing peace, when really peace could be being experienced. And so we have these two types of fear, and we all experience it. And the thing with fear is that sometimes fear, it just taunts us, and it toys with us. That sometimes that's what fear is. And then other times, there is fear that actually terrorizes us. And when it terrorizes us, it seems to paralyze us. And maybe you've experienced both kinds of fear. I certainly have experienced both kinds of fear. That fear where terror is real. For me, it goes way back. It goes back to 1979, April 27th, 1979. And it was here in San Antonio. And I was downtown San Antonio, and this event was taking place called the Battle of Flowers. And it was a Battle of Flowers parade. I was a Boy Scout, and some of you guys go, oh, that explains it all. Of course you were afraid. You know, but I was a Boy Scout, and I was there because we were responsible for selling this section of seats. It was a fundraiser for us, and so we were there, and I was there. I'd been dropped off early to do this. My parents were eventually coming. My grandparents were in town. They were eventually coming. My sister was with my parents. She was coming, but I was there without any family support, and we had just heard a report. And the report that we had heard was that there was a sniper, an active shooter, and that somebody had already been killed, and over a dozen had been shot and were wounded, and everybody was just supposed to hunker down and just stay put. And it wasn't but a few minutes later when all of a sudden the area where I was at just turned into mass hysteria, and people just started running as if they were running for their lives. I was by myself. I didn't know what to do, and I saw that, and I instantly felt this terror and this fear because I knew what the reality was of what was near us. And so I just began to try to run for my life, and there was a tree really close to where I was. And so as I began to run, and I ran in circles around this tree. I must have run at least three times around this tree. I didn't know where the shooter was. I was just scared. I just knew I needed to be moving. A moving target is a harder target, and I'm just running. Finally, the crowd gets to where they're getting past me and away from me, and I realize, I think I'm safer with the crowd. And so I ran to join the crowd and just kept moving with them. We ran for about 2 minutes. That's a long time to just be running when you think you're running for your life. And then we reached a point where everybody started calming down, and we just stood around. Shortly, an officer showed up, and he let us know, you guys are safe. There is no harm right here where you guys are. There were people, they were weeping, they were hysterical. I heard people starting to talk about the things that they feared that they had lost because they just picked up and ran and left things behind them. And it was a moment of terror that was very, very real. And what turns out to set this whole thing off was that they discovered that somebody had taken a snap and pop and just thrown it. And it was that pop, when we already had heard about there being a sniper, that caused people to just begin to run for their lives. You see, normally a little snap and pop, it's just that thing that just kind of toys and taunts you. It's just a little pop and you just didn't know, and it's just a jolt. But because of the information and what the reality was of what was taking place downtown, that snap and pop turned into this great fear of somebody just shot a gun right where we were. So yes, there is fear that can terrorize us. But then there's that fear that it just kind of taunts and toys with us. You know what I think about when I think about the type of fear that just taunts and toys? It's that fear that we willfully subject ourselves to that often taunts and toys with us. You know, maybe you're somebody that you'll go watch a scary movie, and you willfully subject yourself to that. And maybe if that's you, maybe you're kind of like the screamer in the room, you know, when the something happens, you go, and you just let it out audibly. But then maybe you're the person that you don't watch a scary movie without your little blankie, because you need a little bit of security and something to block and save and protect you. And you're watching that, and as those scenes start to get there on that screen, your blanket just starts rising up more and more because you are trying to cover yourself because that fear, it is toying and taunting with you. A few years ago, our family, we went to Vegas in the summer for a few days, and we were just looking for different things that we could be doing as a family to have fun. And there is a building there on the strip called the Stratosphere. And it's their tall building right there. It's about 900 feet tall. And they have some rides on top of that building. And we decided that at least my kids and I, Noah and Miri, the three of us decided that we were going to go ride one of those rides. And the ride that we decided to ride is called Big Shot. I've got a video. I want you to see this so that you can have a perspective of what it is that we were doing. Let's watch this.
Pull some G's like a Top Gun jet pilot on Big Shot. A gut-wrenching 4G. High-speed shot up past the top of the tower with a free fall back down toward the launch pad. Experience the highest, most extreme thrill rides in the United States only at the Stratosphere.
So that red part Vegas right there, without a net. That's part of the ride, Big Shot. And so we decided that we were going to go ride this. And so we go and we get up there, whatever, now on top. And when we come around the corner and we see it, we just kind of look up. And you look up and you see the kind of the clouds. You almost start to get a little wobbly just because you just start to feel the reality of what you're about to do. And while we're in that line, I just kept thinking, I'm not sure I want to do this. Well, we go and we finally get up there and we strap in. So they strap us in and they lock us down. And after they strap us in and they lock us down, I'm really starting to regret this choice that I have made. And I'm thinking, I don't want to do this. And that turned into a thought of, I can't do this. And I turned to Miri, and I don't want to, she goes, yeah, I don't either. And so we're looking at each other. What made it so bad is we've been in this thing over 3 minutes. They put you and strap you in, and they just leave you there. You have no idea when they're going to launch you. And sitting there and just feeling this tension about this ride. And go, I don't. And I looked at her and I said, I don't think I can do it. And as soon as I said that, it took off. And as soon as it took off, my arms right here, and it took off, and it was like, oh, this is easy. And there wasn't anything to it once I was in motion. But the fear of actually taking off and that, what that was going to be like, that became so, it just taunted and it toyed with me. Listen, we all have our own fear stories. We all have those experiences of where we've been and what we've done that causes and brings fear to us, because fear is this thing that it is very real. And I think that the most crippling fears, they're not the fears that we willfully subject ourselves to. It's the fears that we didn't invite, the situations and the circumstances that we didn't invite, that those are the ones that tend to be the most crippling. Experts have identified the hierarchy of fear and what our greatest fear is and what kind of our lowest fears are. And when you look at what our greatest fear is as humanity, the greatest fear that we have in humanity is the fear of dying. It's the fear of death. The younger you are in your adult life, the more that fear seems to be real. That you just go, I fear what might happen, what might cause me to die. We fear death. You ever heard that phrase? Some things are worse than dying. You know, that gets said because everybody understands that great fear, that fear of death. As you move down a notch, what's a fear for us? That we have that fear of us being injured. It's just this fear of injury, this fear of physical pain being brought on to us. Some of that fear has to do with, is that going to forever change the quality of my life, of what might happen to me? And we do, we have that fear. As you move down, and it's a lesser fear, It's that fear of isolation. It's that fear of, you know what, I'm around people, but it doesn't feel like anybody cares. That I just feel so isolated. I feel so lonely. And that is a very real fear. And they say that lowest level of fear that we really deal with, it's the fear of humiliation. It's that fear that you didn't want to be embarrassed and you didn't want to feel humiliated, but something happened and now you were out of control and now you are humiliated. I can relate to that one because that is a real fear for me. I just do not want to be humiliated. I don't mind putting myself out there, and when I put myself out there, it's not humiliation because I was in control, but I don't like it when I'm not in control and I feel humiliated. And a few weeks ago, I was here at Cross Point, and I was humiliated. That feeling just came on. I felt the heat and the needles come all over me. So I'd already taught at 9:30, and I'd already taught at 11. And as a public speaker, you know, you fear a few things. You know, like, is my fly open? You know, you're always wondering, you know, hey, you're kind of concerned. You know, you don't want that to happen, you know. And so I'm out there, and I'm actually hanging out at our welcome center after the 11 o'clock service. And my daughter comes walking up. She's kind of looking at me, and then she looked me in the eye. She goes, Dad, are you wearing girl jeans? I was like, no. Where did that come from? She takes and she kind of looks at me. Dad, you're wearing girl jeans. And I'm like in denial. I'm like, no, I'm not wearing girl jeans. I'm going back to my when I was a kid, and I remember, okay, girls' flaps are on this side, guys' flaps are on that side. So which way did my flap? I even looked. No, they are not girl jeans. She looks at me and she goes, Dad, you have girl jeans on. She gets her phone, and she starts to search the store that these jeans came from because the pocket gives it away. And as she's doing that, I'm still in denial, but I'm starting to go, you know what, my legs were a little bit tighter, I remember the ankle. My socks seemed to be showing a lot that day, but there was plenty of length. And I was like, going, I don't. And she takes her phone, and she turns it to me, and she goes, Dad, you are wearing girl jeans. Well, we had lunch plans, but I have to tell you, I went home and changed. Because at that moment, I was feeling humiliated that I had the, and all I kept thinking was, I wonder how many people thought I was wearing girl jeans, recognized, knew that I was wearing girl jeans. And I tell you what, that was a very real humiliation moment for me. Fear is something that we all deal with, that it is a very real thing. Judah Smith, he's a pastor, and I was reading a devotional of his that is out there in YouVersion, and that devotional is called How's Your Soul? And I was reading this, and there was just a line in there that he brought this question to, and I just said, you know, that is worth repeating. And he said this, he said, there is nothing like absolute helplessness to make you evaluate what your soul holds on to and where you get your sense of security. And I think that people who wrestle with fear the most are people that wrestle with insecurity the most. And that fear just creeps all over them. You know, I think that there's another very real fear that is affecting the choices that people are making today. And it's FOMO. It's that fear of missing out. And that there's that sense that we fear, you know, I'm going to miss out. And so we end up making some choices, some regretful choices, some destructive choices, because we're afraid we're going to miss out. And we end up regretting what it is that we end up doing. Fear is on a mission. And we need to know that and understand it. And fear is on a mission to prevent you from having peace. That is its goal. Is to keep you from having peace. We're going to be looking in the book of Judges this morning. We're going to be looking at chapter 6, chapter 7 of the book of Judges. And it's a really great action-packed chapter. If you're going, I'm not just chapter, book. If you're going, hey, where is it that I could read? I'm interested in reading some of my Bible. Where is it I could turn to and read? It's in the Old Testament. It's the seventh book in your Bible. And if you've ever heard of this guy named Samson, he's got a couple of chapters in there devoted to him. It just covers the life and times of a few different people and what it is, the opportunities that they had to be able to serve God and honor him and what they ended up doing with those opportunities. They were called judges. It's a way that they called prophets judges back then in that particular time period. So that's what they're doing. And so the book of Judges here in chapter 6, the setting is that there's this Israelites, and there's a certain tribe of these Israelites that they have been being suppressed by the Midianites. Now, the Israelites, they're God's chosen people, and they've moved into this land that God had promised them in the land of Canaan, and so they're living there. But one of the things God told them before they ever went and took possession of the land, he says, hey, have no other gods before me. And when they went into this land, they started to worship these false gods that the people in that land had been worshiping before they ever got there. And so they've been doing this, and God said, because of that, I'm going to punish you. And so he said he was going to punish them for 7 years, and the Midianites, he didn't say he was going to do 7 years. It's been 7 years that he's been punishing them, and they've been having to live this suppressed life. And so they've gotten chased into the foothills. They're trying to live in caves. They're struggling to try to provide for themselves by the things that they're growing and the livestock that they have. And the Midianites just keep coming along, and they come along in big, strong numbers, and they just keep taking everything from them and suppressing them. And so they cry out to God, and they ask God to deliver them. And so God hears that cry, and this is where we're going to pick it up in Judges chapter 6, starting in verse 11. It says, then the angel of the Lord came and sat beneath the great tree at Ophrah. Now, if you know Oprah Winfrey, and if you've ever heard her story, she was supposed to be named Ophrah right here from the Bible, but the letter got left off, and so she ended up becoming Oprah. That is your free trivia for today. So we're going to get back to this. So the angel of the Lord came and sat beneath the great tree at Ophrah, which belonged to Joash of the clan of Abiezer. Gideon, son of Joash, was threshing wheat at the bottom of the winepress to hide the grain from the Midianites. This is showing you some of the fear that they're afraid. And the winepress is a terrible place for you to take and separate the wheat from the chaff. And because what you do is when you separate that, you just keep fluffing it up in the air, and the wind just kind of blows away the light chaff, and then you have the grain of the actual wheat. And he's there, and he's hunkered down in this wine press because he's afraid, and he doesn't want them to know that they have wheat. They're doing anything with it, and he doesn't want them to know where it even is. Verse 12, the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said, mighty hero, the Lord is with you. So there's Gideon, and here's this angel of the Lord that comes along and says to him, not just hero, but mighty hero, and says, hey, the Lord is with you. Sir, Gideon replied, if the Lord is with us, why has all of this happened to us? And where are the miracles our ancestors told us about? Didn't they say, the Lord brought us up out of Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us and handed us over to the Midianites. Then the Lord turned to him and said, go with the strength that you have and rescue Israel from the Midianites. I'm sending you. That Gideon is being singled out by the angel of the Lord to go and deliver his people. But Lord, Gideon replied, how can I rescue Israel? My clan is the weakest in the whole tribe of Manasseh, and I am the least in my entire family. And the Lord said to him, I will be with you, and you will destroy the Midianites as if you were fighting against one man. Now the Midianites, it's already been described that how many Midianites there were. It was like looking at locusts, this group that's just kind of, you can't even count them. There's just so many of them everywhere. He says, you're going to defeat them as if you were just fighting against one man. And Gideon replied, if you are truly going to help me, show me a sign to prove that it is really the Lord speaking to me. So he told this angel of the Lord to wait there. Well, he left and he went and prepared a meal, and he brought that meal back to give to the angel of the Lord. And as he did that and he put it up on this rock, this angel of the Lord took a staff, reached it out, touched that meal, and it was instantly consumed. And he's like, okay, you're from God. And he trusted it. And then the angel of the Lord told him, I want you to go and I want you to tear down that altar that's been made to Baal. Baal was this false god. I want you to go and tear that down. That altar had been put in place by his own father. So he went and did it, but he did it at night because he was afraid that they would find out who did it and they'd come after him. Well, they did end up searching and finding who it might be, and they decided this had to have been Gideon. So they wanted to do something to him, and his dad stepped up. His dad stepped up and he said, hey, listen, why don't we let Baal punish him? That if Baal's a real god, then let Baal deal with him and let Baal punish him. And so nothing ended up happening to him. That Gideon was safe and he had nothing to worry about. So he realized this is God. So we're going to look at this. Judges chapter 6, verse 22. It says, then Gideon realized that it was the angel of the Lord, and he cried out, oh, sovereign Lord, I'm doomed. I've seen the angel of the Lord face to face. It's all right, the angel replied. Do not be afraid. You will not die. So the angel of the Lord told him, I want you to go and I want you to fight the Midianites. And I want you to be done with them. And I'm going to use you. And he's like, I'm not so sure about that. If that's true, then I need a sign from you. So he took this fleece and he laid it out and he said, hey, in the morning, if the fleece is wet but the ground is dry, then I'll know it's you, God. And so the next morning came and the ground was dry but the fleece was wet. So he was like, okay, if I'm going to go fight these guys, can you give me one more sign? And so he asked to do the opposite. Can you keep the fleece dry and make the ground wet? So the next day that happened. So he knew that he was supposed to do this, and this was from God. So he ends up gathering up as many warriors as he could gather up that would go and fight against the Midianites. He ends up gathering up 32,000 warriors to go fight this army that can't even be counted. And God tells him, he says, you got too many men, Gideon. I need you to reduce the size of your army. In fact, well, let's do this. Gideon, just tell the men, if anybody's afraid to go in and fight the Midianites, just go ahead and go home. 22,000 went home. That they were afraid. We don't want to go. So he had 10,000 men. At this point, Gideon's kind of thinking, we were way outnumbered at 32,000. Now I can't even begin to imagine what this is going to be like. And fear starting to set in a little bit more. And God tells him, Gideon, you got too many men. There's only 10. You got too many men. Send them all to go get a drink of water. So he does. As they go by a nearby source of water and they take their drink. And God says, okay, the 300 men that drank this way, that's going to be the men that you're going to use. The 9,700 drank the other way, send them home. 300, that's a good number. And so that's his number. And that's what he's supposed to be using to go in and to do this battle. And as he's supposed to go in and do this battle, he is really afraid, once again, that he's outnumbered, that he's outmatched, that he can't do this. And so God tells him, hey, well, if you're afraid, then you can go ahead and sneak into the camp. Listen to what it is that they're saying. Take somebody with you and then come back. So this is what happens in chapter 7, verse 13. Gideon crept up just as a man was telling his companion about a dream. And the man said, I had a dream, and in my dream, a loaf of barley bread came tumbling down into the Midianite camp. It hit a tent, turned it over, and knocked it flat. Okay, so he had a dream, right? But this is what happens. So his companion that he took with him, his companion answered, he said, Your dream can mean only one thing. God has given Gideon, son of Joash, the Israelite, victory over Midian and all of its allies. And when Gideon heard the dream and its interpretation, he bowed in worship before the Lord. And he returned to the Israelite camp and he shouted, "Get up, for the Lord has given you victory over the Midianite hordes." And he divided the 300 men into three groups, and he gave each man a ram's horn and a clay jar with a torch in it. And then he told the guys, he said, "You guys follow me. They're in three groups now, and when I go in, you do as I do." And so they all went, and he took that jar with that flame in it, and they smashed it, and they blew their horns, and they shouted, "For the Lord and for Gideon." And when they did this, they had surrounded the area. And the Midianites, as they heard this, they went into mass hysteria and euphoria, and it was dark, and they just began slashing and fighting anybody that was near them, thinking that they were already being seized. And Gideon and his men never went into the battlefield. But they all began to fight each other. And when they had dwindled down so much, they screamed and yelled and began to run in. And they just began to run out, the Midianites, and they fled and they left. See, Gideon was facing something that really he had a lot of fear. And fear is this thing that wants to keep you from experiencing peace. But he decided to choose to have faith, because faith is the opposite of fear. And he chose to have faith, because the fear that he was feeling, it was a polluted fear, not a pure fear, but a polluted fear, because God had already told him, "I'm going to use you, and I'm going to deliver you, and I'm going to use you to deliver my people." So as we look at this, we get to see verse 22. It says, "When the 300 Israelites blew their ram's horn, the Lord caused the warriors in the camp to fight against each other with their swords." So see, we're either going to have fear or we're going to have faith. And we have to choose to have faith if that's what we are going to have when fear sets in, when fear creeps in. And so what I want to share with you quickly is I want to share with you four faith-based reactions to fear. These four faith-based reactions to fear that we could have faith instead of fear. So the first one is stand your ground. Stand your ground. When God's behind you and God has you where he wants you, stand your ground. In the book of Exodus, chapter 14, this is where Moses is with the people and he set them free and he wants to lead them out. And he's just now left Egypt, but the Egyptians are coming in rapidly behind them, chasing after them. It says this, starting in verse 13. "But Moses told the people, 'Don't be afraid. Just stand still and watch the Lord rescue you today. The Egyptians that you see today will never be seen again. The Lord himself will fight for you. Just stay calm.'" And you see, when we take a stand where God plants us, this is where we can begin to experience the power of God. Moses did not get the privilege of actually leading the people into that promised land. Instead, Joshua would end up taking over to lead those people. And as they were beginning to move in to the land, Joshua records this in the book of Joshua, chapter 1, verse 9. "This is my command: be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." So what do we need to do? We need to stand our ground, stand your ground. A second thing, pray for peace. This is a faith-based reaction, is pray for peace. In Philippians, Paul's writing to the church there, and he says this to them. It's found in Philippians chapter 4, verses 6 and 7. He says, "Don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank him for all that he has done." Tell him what you need. You know what we need when we have fear? We need peace. That's what we need. And we need to tell him, God, I need peace, and I trust that you can bring peace, and that you're the only one who can, and that you would pray for peace. And worrying won't help. I know some of you guys just want to probably nudge somebody next to you. Worrying won't help, but praying can. So pray for peace. Verse 7, then you will experience God's peace, which exceeds anything that we can understand. His peace will guard your hearts and minds as you live in Christ Jesus. So stand your ground. Pray for peace. Third thing is trust God. Trust him. The psalmist was writing, and the psalmist knew what it was like to be afraid. And so in Psalm chapter 56, verses 3 and 4, he wrote, but when I am afraid, not if, but when I am afraid, I will put my trust in you. He's talking to God. I'm going to put my trust in you. I praise God for what he has promised. I trust in God. So why should I be afraid? And what can mere mortals do to me? You know what faith does? See, fear focuses on the temporary, and faith focuses on the eternal. And when we have faith, it helps us to have an eternal perspective no matter what might happen in the moment. And the fourth thing is reject the lie. Reject the lie. Because see, this polluted fear, it's a lie, and it is a lie from the greatest liar of all times. And that is Satan, the devil. He is a liar. Jesus was speaking of him, and he was speaking to a group that wasn't listening to him. And this is what he shared in John chapter 8, verses 42 through 44. Jesus told them, if God were your father, you would love me, because I have come to you from God. I am not here on my own, but he sent me. Why can't you understand what I'm saying? It's because you can't even hear me. For you are the children of your father, the devil, and you love to do the evil things he does. He was a murderer from the beginning. He has always hated the truth because there is no truth in him. And when he lies, it is consistent with his character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. And we have to reject the lie. It is a faith-based reaction to reject the lie, the polluted fear lie. Stand in faith. And when we stand in faith, it allows us to finish off our fears. See, Jesus, he is proven to be the great overcomer. That Jesus overcame even death. And when you put your faith and your hope and your trust in him, you have the great overcomer inside of you. Listen, our band's going to come out. And we're going to sing a final song together. And we're going to sing a final song together that allows us to celebrate God who is on our side and God who gives us victory in life. And we're also going to recognize that, listen, that there is an enemy and he is the devil. And that we just need to let him know that his fear has no home in our heart. So pray with me. Heavenly Father, we know that you are the great overcomer. God, and we trust you. But God, as things happen in life and fear, it taunts and toys and sometimes even terrorizes. God, whether we're afraid that we'll never be loved. God, whether we're afraid that a relationship is beyond repair. God, you know that the fears that we end up feeling and they begin to consume us. God, I pray that we would really lean into you, that we would pray and ask you to bring a peace that only you can bring. God, help us to not let Satan have a strong voice in our head or heart, but to move him out so that your voice is the voice that we hear. Jesus, it's in your name we pray. Amen.